This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 2974 for Thursday, the 26th of December 2019. Today's show is entitled Guitar Setup PT 2 inches. It is hosted by NY Bill and is about 52 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is NY Bill finish a guitar setup.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
This is NY Bill, and I'm back to do part two. We'll see if we get through it in just one extra part or if it takes three. But back to continue on this Squire Telecaster. It's been here since I did the last episode. It's been sitting on this bench. It's got to be months now. It's been so long, I forgot what I said in the last episode, so I just had to listen again to what I said. I made some notes while I listened. Hang on. Things I trailed off on when I talked. That other place you can get guitar parts and like wood and stuff like that is Warmoth. They make decent stuff, and if you like part a guitar, if you get a Telecaster body and a Telecaster neck from them, and then the nice hardware, and you build it up, they actually retain their value. So they're kind of known in the I don't want to say industry, but in the builders and makers and players market, they're a known maker. The other thing I trailed off on was when I was describing the wood of Fenders, and I said stacked wood. I was talking about like cheaper guitar being plywood and the sides not being opaque, so you wouldn't see where all that laminate was, but they just put a thin veneer of a nicer wood on top and bottom, and then, you know, do the sunburst or whatever, or do a binding to separate the two. And I mentioned stacked wood, and I trailed off. So Fender American will be stacked in two or three pieces of alder or ash, sometimes mahogany, but that's kind of a rare special edition. I mean stacked, I'm not finding a way to say it anyways. Boards are stacked next to each other. They're not stacked up in layers like a laminate. It's these ones I'm looking, I don't have my Fender in front of me, but so a Fender would be two pieces of 2-inch or 2.5-inch board that gets planed to the right height, and they would be like 6 inches wide, and then the two of them are stacked together. Sometimes they're book matched, sometimes that will just be like a Fender American Elite or something that's two pieces, and then you usually go to three pieces. When you get to like an MIM Telemex, it's like five pieces, and it's all like chunks of solid wood. Unless you take one big giant chunk of wood and carve a whole entire guitar out of it, you're going to stack it up in some way. You're going to book match your sets. You're going to, it's just, you got to deal with it, but it's not like plywood laminate. Like that's what I was saying. So this, what else did I trail off on? Oh, when I was doing the repair on the 56 Les Paul, and I said, I stacked some mahogany and some, maple plugs, and I put them in the tuner holes. That's because the wood had gotten so warped over the years, and people had put different tuners in it over the years. They made those holes too big, so I had plugged them in. I just, in that picture, I hadn't drilled them out yet to put the old tuners back in to the proper size. What else did I trail off on? That looks like it was it. Okay, so this has been here forever. I just took a picture of it again, just to show you that it's just been sitting here. I'm hoping that when I peel this painter's tape off, it hasn't been sitting here so long it doesn't want to pull off easily, but it hasn't really been hot or humid down here. In that picture, I mentioned, yeah, the other thing I trailed off on. In that picture, I mentioned fretwork if you're installing new frets in the foreground of the picture. So in the foreground of that picture, I just showed quick the tools I use to install frets new. And I'm not finding one more tool, but I'll describe it. It's not really a tool, but it's a mask. Anyways, on the left is the fret press. So this goes, that goes into a drill press, and the brass collar that you see inserted in it. There's different brass collars for the different radiuses of necks, like a 12 inch or a 16 inch, or I think Martin's 16, Gibson's 12. What is Fender? It's not coming to me now, but they all kind of use a different radius on the tops of their necks. So when you buy this tool, you get the different radius brass inserts. You stick them in there. This goes in a drill press. When you have your fretboard all your slots put in your fretboard, you cut your frets to length, you bring them over to the press, and you press them in with this. You can also use a hammer. I didn't want to risk marring up the fingerboard with a hammer. I never tried it that way. Next to that is the fret level. So this is just, it's basically a rough, pretty aggressive level. And the ends have all been beveled off. So you're not going to dig into any wood with the ends or the sides. You either get the neck as flat as you want it, or there are some jigs where you can get the neck and tune it up to pitch so that you get the relief in there, set your relief, and then little screws come up and support, straps to support the body down, and screws come and support the neck, and you take the strings off, you know, relieve the tension, but because the jig is holding the neck right where it is, the neck is held with the string tension relief in it, if that makes sense. Either way, you're going to do it. You put your brand new frets in, and they're going to be, some of them are going to be in different heights. What I usually do is mask it off again, or I use this template, which I can't find. They're little tiny thin pieces of stainless steel with a slot in the middle that fits over the fret, so you can do some work on them without hitting the fretboard. So you level the fretboard with the rough file, which is kind of where this this Squire is at. It looks like they did a rough file on it and just a touch of polish. But anyways, that's how you level your frets to begin with. And that's where the recrowning I mentioned might come in. So next to that was the recrowning tool. And again, in the front are different inserts for small, medium, jumbo frets. You put in whatever crown you're trying to achieve again, and back and forth on the fret. Usually with that template, I use the stainless steel template again to get the crown back into the fret. You can also use this to start your round over at the edge, but I use files as well. What would I usually do next? Oh, at the very end, I skipped over it, but fretting. This should have been over by the fret press. But there is a red and blue handled at the very end. That's just nippers that I use, and I got them flush cut. So there's just bevels in the back of the cut, and at the top, it's right at the point, if that makes sense. So once the frets are hammered in, they're all staggered and sticking out and jagged. I use this to go along and clip and get everything as close as I can to the fretboard. And then it's files again to get rid of all those points that are sticking out on the sides. The black tool that was right next to it, this is a fret nipper. So if you have something like a Les Paul that has binding on the neck and you want your fret to overhang the binding, but there's no slot in the binding for the fret, you nip the ends of the fret, the tang in the bottom of the fret. You nip it with this black tool, and then you have the tang that's going to go into the wood and two pieces of just fret, just two little, like 32nd of an inch of fret that's going to overhang into that binding. So that's another tool I use. And then I use files just to put the start the round over going up and down. Like, so on treble and bass side, I will hold an, at either that same fret level I use to level the frets, or other files at like a 30 degree bevel towards the center of the fretboard, and run that up and down to get rid of the edges of the fret. And then from there, you're going to get into just like finesse work. So the next step on a fret job, I keep mentioning this work, and don't take anything I'm saying and go take a guitar, and if you're not comfortable, just start doing all this crap to it, because I don't want you to ruin a guitar, or, you know, think what I'm saying, you're going to make it play better or be better and, you know, just screw it up. So don't do any of this beginning part with the frets unless you're absolutely comfortable with what I'm mentioning and you got the tools, and yeah, you're working at your own risk here. So after the fret level with the file, I use progressively smoother files, and then I'll start getting into sandpaper. You start with a coarse sandpaper, I do at least, and go to finer and finer grits. Trick you can use is use a Sharpie on the top of the fret. You got it masked off with tape, so you're not going to mark on the fretboard. But use a Sharpie and go over the top of each crown, and every pass of a file or sandpaper, the file actually, not the sandpaper, you're going to see which frets you're hitting and taking that Sharpie off and which frets are still low. So you want to get it so that it's all even, the Sharpie's going away, you do your recrown, and you start coming in with, I don't know what I would start with on, I would just go and feel the sandpaper, and I'd probably start with maybe 100 grit, that might be too much, 120 or 200 grit. So you're going to start polishing up the frets. You want to go until you stop seeing scratch marks. And just like doing a finish, when you're sanding and buffing out a finish, don't see a scratch mark and think you're going to go 3 grits finer and get that scratch. I'll get that scratch out later. You got to get all your scratch. You got to get everything to the same dullness, if that makes sense. So you start with a, let's say 200 grit, and then you go up to maybe a 300 and a 400, go right up to 800. And you can even go up to a 1200 grit. You can wet sand this if that's helping, a little soapy water, dish soap and some water. So once you're up in like the 1200 grit, you have to switch to a different type of sandpaper. And that's basically, how long did we just go? Like 12 minutes on the recorder to get to where we can actually work on this Squire. So this Squire came, and it's to the point, it's to after that point, I just talked about all that stuff. We're up to it, the final polishing stage, which I don't think they did at all. Or if they did, it's very minimal. For that, I use a special type of sandpaper, and then I use polishing compounds. So the special type of sandpaper that I use is the Zona Tool Company. It's called 3M Wet or Dry Micron Graded Polishing Paper. So this goes from 30 microns, then there's 15, 9 micron, 3 micron, 2 micron, 1 micron. At the end, you're sanding with 1 micron sandpaper, and it doesn't feel like you're doing anything, but you're getting right up to that polish level, where next you can just go to like a rubbing compound and a polishing compound, and you're going to have a nice, like a mirror finish. So this Zona stuff, I took a picture. I should remember, I don't think I had very complete show notes. I was in a rush last time. Today I have all day, so hopefully I can like put stuff from last episode and stuff from this episode in the show notes, this Zona sandpaper. What I do is I have these red scissors, which were sacrificial scissors. They're not going to be cutting anything else but this stuff. It's cloth backed. It's fairly thin. It's folded over. And what I do is I cut about a half inch to a 3/4 strip out of it. And then what you have, I'll kind of fan it out. I'll fan my strips out. This is what I'm going to be using. And usually you can get right, you can get to the next stage with just this bit I'm using. So if you buy this Zona, I'm not a shill for them, but if you buy this package of microfibers, you're going to get 12 to maybe 15 guitar worth of work out of the one package. So there's the strip I cut, and you can see they're color coded. So the most coarse one is on the left, the green, then it goes gray, blue, pink, and then the white is the 1 micron. So I just use those little strips. So I start with the green, and I'm going right in now to this Squire. So you just start, I'm starting on the first fret, and that looks better already. This looks like a better shine I'm getting out of it than what's coming out of the factory. So I just did like, I don't know, it's on the tip of my finger, and I just went up and down, 8-10 times, and it's shinier. And when I look, it's evenly glossy, so I don't have any, I'm going to have to get those, I'm trying to get these scratch marks out, so I hope I can get these with this green Zona. If not, I got to go to a rougher course, but first fret looks better already. So 2, I'll do 3. This is all it takes. 3, 4. I don't know if you want to count how many times I just went up and down. So, and then as you go, you might just have to move the paper on your finger a little bit, but I usually get a whole fret out of that one slice. Let me take a picture here and see if you can tell already. The two frets on the left, I have just hit with the green 30 micron. And the two frets in the right in this picture are still factory. Maybe if I turn the flash on. Yeah, that may come out. But actually taking that picture and zooming in, I realized I didn't get all the scratches out. So let me start again. All right, I'm not going to bore you with the whole entire board here. So you make your way all the way down the fretboard with the Zona 30 micron. If you don't find this sandpaper and you want to try and find stuff local, you go to an automotive, like a repair shop, and go into the finishing aisle. This is where you can get wet, dry sandpapers that's going up to crazy 3,000, 6,000, 8,000 grit. So you'd be able to find a pack or assemble a pack of wet, dry papers that you can use for buffing, like lacquer, buffing a finish, or doing fretwork. I found this stuff at some point and it seems to work well, so I continue to use this. I'm not going to keep recording all the way through buffing it out, but it's the same process. Go up with the green all the way through until you see an even polish on each fret. And then switch to the next one, which would be gray, 15 micron. You're going to do the same thing. Switch to the next one. It's eight. What? How many was I doing? 10 passes up and down until you go through all these papers through to the white. So I'll pause here so you don't have to listen to like 20 minutes of, you know, this sound. All right. Okay, I'm on the one micron now. And like I was saying, you won't feel like you're doing anything. I'm having trouble. I have to use my thumbnail to scratch. The back is a felt and the front just has a little tiny grit to it. So let me do this final pass. It just feels like you're rubbing a cloth across it, but it's doing work. While I was doing this, I looked to my left and there is a Les Paul Jr. that I built once. I just had this piece of mahogany hanging around the shop that was too small for like a larger, like even a Les Paul, which isn't particularly a large guitar, but it wasn't long enough, this piece of mahogany. It was bookmatched and I had it for, you know, 20 years before I even did something with it. And then I remembered Les Paul Juniors, which are a smaller body, especially the DC type, the double horn. And I built one. I didn't try and be like historically accurate with it, but I built one with my own like stylized inlay and it came out well, but I did the fretwork before I knew about this Zona stuff. So I pulled it over here and taped it up, and I'm gonna do that one as well. All right, these are polished. I can see my reflection in them. I'll take a picture. I don't know if it's gonna be like a good before and after, but so you should be able to see in this picture, these are like mirrors now. This will play so nice on a string. If you wanted or you didn't get quite up to this mirror level, you can switch now to a Dremel with a buffing pad and then start with like a polishing compound or even towards the buffing. Get into a buffing range of automotive compounds and just that's how I think I did that DC, that junior. All right, okay, let me pull it over here. There's the Les Paul. I had already taped it up. I do prepared, like, you know, while I'm doing this Squire, I'm gonna do this guitar as well. There's pictures somewhere of me building this right from a chunk of wood. Okay, so these are as polished as I feel comfortable with this. So let me start taking this tape off and hope it doesn't be too aggressive with this. No, it's not bad. We redid our kitchen, and the first thing I did was put up like a plastic curtain wall at the dining room because I didn't want to get all that dust into the dining room, sheetrock dust and whatnot. And it was summertime, and by the time we finished the kitchen and I pulled up what's supposed to be non-stick painter's tape from the floor. It was taking up some of the polyurethane off the oak, which I had to get in there and repair, but it was unexpected. So if, I mean, this painter's tape, it's easy peel, but if you're in like a humid or in a hot environment, it's going to start turning into a glue. Some of this is kind of wanting not to pull free, not start to pull free, but once you get the edge started, it's pulling right off. All right, I might, I'll cut this out and edit just so you don't have to listen to me peel tape for 20, what is this, 21 fret? Actually, this is a better photo to show you the mirror polish. Once I start seeing the rosewood again, it looks better than the blue tape. So here's a picture of the frets polished up to the 1 micron as I'm taking the painter's tape off. That shows the a little better contrast of the mirroring. So that was the step I feel they didn't take in the factory. It took me what? All told, it probably took me 12 minutes. Well, masking it, then pulling the mask off. It's, you know, comfortably maybe a half hour job, but that's the step they were skipping, in my opinion. You know, I was just thinking, if you recall, I said that this neck has no finish on it. It feels like maybe just a satiny oil finish or something like that. This tape is pulling off nicely. I don't know how your mileage would be on a neck with like a urethane or a gloss finish to it, leaving this tape on for months like I did. I don't recommend it. Pick out a half hours of time and do the whole buff job and then peel this tape off. That's what I recommend. I was being lazy. After I get this tape off, then we'll be to the step I was saying, like, you're not going to do any irreversible damage. If you file frets too low, somewhere up high or low, you're going to get buzzing. You're going to get to a point where you have to take it to a professional and have it either learn how to refret or have it refretted. So only do this part I mentioned. Well, I feel comfortable saying you can use that Zona stuff on your existing guitar, but getting into files and stuff and start recrowning and releveling, unless you feel comfortable, you can do like irreparable damage and need a fret job. But at this point, doing that buff, I think anybody could do a buff. And, I mean, you know, I'm not being, you know what I mean. And all the rest of the stuff I'm going to talk about, unless you over tighten the truss rod one way or the other and like jam it in there or get things so out of whack, that's a way you can damage things. But we'll just be moving that truss rod key just a touch. And the setup that I'm going to talk about, you could always just reset it up or fix whatever you set up wrong. So there it is. That is the blue tape off it. And there is just a little bit of residue. I'm going to go upstairs and get a set of strings. And on the electronics bench, I keep lint-free like towels and alcohol. I'm going to clean the rest of the stickiness off this fretboard. And then we'll talk about straightening out this neck. Not dead straight, but it's got too much relief in it as it is. And setting up the bridge here and then setting up the intonation. I can talk about bridge height, but that tends to be personal preference, but I can mention it when I get back. Okay, I'm back from upstairs. I got the chem wipes, the alcohol. You want to use alcohol for this because alcohol evaporates quickly and it won't raise the grain on you. Water is going to raise the grain on wood. That can be used to your advantage when you're building. If you put a ding in wood, you can raise the grain and then resand things flat. If the ding is deeper, you can take some paper towels and wet them, you know, squeeze them out, make them damp, put them over that ding and use an iron and get steam going. And that'll actually, in some cases, get rid of that dent. It'll swell that wood underneath that is the dent and kind of restore it again to the point where you can sand things away. But yeah, don't use water when you're, I don't clean my guitars often anyways, but for what I'm doing here, I'm trying to get off sticky residue. I don't want to use water or soap. Alcohol evaporates quickly and it won't mess with the wood. It's isopropyl alcohol. Sometimes after I get, I might do that. I'm going to go back upstairs and get one more thing. Lemon oil. For rosewood fretboards, I like to put lemon oil on them. It keeps the wood from drying out. It makes it nicer to play, and plus it smells cool. It smells like lemons. And surprise, surprise, I couldn't find it right away. This stuff is Dunlop. You can get lemon oil anywhere. I'm sure they just get lemon oil in bulk from a generic supplier and stick it in this bottle and put Dunlop on it and charge more. This is Dunlop 65 Ultimate Lemon Oil. And then for some reason, you cannot buy that without getting the polishing, the Dunlop 65 guitar polish, which I never clean. If I get like an old vintage guitar and it's got like grime and stuff, I like to just leave it in there. And I'm not one of those people that every time I use my guitar, I wipe it down. So, oh, a little out of breath from all the stairs. So this stuff, it's just got like a felt pad applicator and you squeeze the tube a little bit and just put it on the rosewood. This wood, I use it on ebony as well. Doesn't do anything to maple because maple usually has a finish on it. Or it's not worth it, in my opinion, to use it on maple. So just put it on, it'll go on wet, and then let the wood just soak as much as it can and take the rest off with a paper towel. So this is the same. When I change my strings on my American Fender, I put this stuff on. It has rosewood. Remember to get behind the nut too. You're not playing back there, but it's got, the wood wants to dry out back there. Sometimes over age, you see cracks develop. All right, there's the lemon oil on, and I went upstairs. Like, what did I get? The alcohol, the chem wipes, pack of strings. I'm gonna put nines on this. Different guitars I use different gauges for. I'm just gonna start out with nines on this and see if I know my other Tele. I got up to tens once. I heard that Stevie Ray Vaughan played really large, crazy strings. Look it up, read a Wikipedia or something. I don't even know how he was. They said he used to blister his fingers and calluses would rip off. He put them on with super glue again. The guy was nuts. But, you know, there was some legend that that's where he was getting some of his tone from, was these big, giant strings. So I put tens on my Telecaster once, way back when. The same Bill I was talking about in the previous one, an apartment mate. And I come home and the nuts cracked off. Up on the E string, I picked the guitar up, I don't notice it. I went to play, and the E string is just totally flopping down on the board. And I look at the nut, and the whole end of it's gone. So when I put those tens in, that nut slot was not prepared to take that large of a string. And once I got it up to tension and I went to work, wherever I went and came back, it just snapped that. That's plastic. I'm sure it would do it to bone. Now, if you're going to go aggressively up in string size, you're going to have the nut slots enlarged. That could be a whole other show. There's different ways of doing nuts and bones. And what else? I get the string winder. My string winder has a little cutter on the back, but I cut my string ends. I don't know why people leave them, just waiting to poke them in the eyes. And a tuner. We're going to need, I got my old Boss TU-12 digital tuner. We're going to need that for the intonation. All right, let me get these strings on. All these years I've been using one of these D'Addario's. I still haven't memorized their color code. Which one? Six is brass. There's a different color to identify which string is what. So when you get into higher gauges, you can tell, or lighter gauges. So brass is the first string. And there's different ways to string a guitar to, like the way you're gonna retain it up at the tuner end. I tune mine so the holes are just a little bit perpendicular. And I put my four fingers at the 12th fret and I pull the string till it's taut on my four fingers, and that's enough string left over to keep winding around the post so you don't start double winding and get this big mess up there. And I kink it good, and I bring the loose piece I'm going to cut, I bring it around the neck post and I get it up underneath the string that's going to have tension and pull backwards. So I'm almost like making a knot. Some people, their first line, they go above the part you're going to cut off and then go below it. There's probably 100 different other ways. You just have to go online, and believe me, people will tell you their opinion about the 100 ways it's better to do this. So, there, it's coming back to life. I won't have you listen through the whole stringing process. Okay, I'm doing the high E. I thought I'd turn the recorder back on because I realized something on the high B when I mentioned that little forefinger trick, and then I still do the lock at the top, but I keep pausing this. I haven't figured out if it's an easier edit to leave all the stuff I want to remove out or in and then cut it out. Like that, dropping a string and going to try and find it. Or hitting pause and then having to stitch a whole bunch of audio files together at the end. I'm sure if I did this much more often, I'd come up with a flow. So here I'm doing the high E, and I don't do the four finger thing. I'm just holding my finger like almost 8 inches. I'm holding the string like almost 8 inches away from the board. I do this with acoustics as well. I just like to have a whole bunch of the B, the little B, and the high E on the post. By the way, these string winders will leave swirl marks at the top of your neck over time. So if you're concerned with that, like a vintage guitar or something, be careful with them. Okay, that's all the strings on. The last thing I got upstairs was the right screwdriver. It's on my, I went to get a Phillips off my electronics bench. The proper screwdriver for the end of the saddles. Don't get in there with something that's not going to fit. You will strip it out and just make a mess of them. Next, after you get it strung, you got to bring it to pitch. Let me just do it roughly by ear and then. I remember when I was a kid and you get to these, the B and the E, you're just like cringing. Getting back from the, you know you're going to snap that string. I usually went too far. Like that, that's a little too far. See how close I was. One trick, the guitarologist on, I like to watch him, he's funny, on YouTube. Just one video I was watching, he did this trick. I didn't use it there, but I can, I suppose. He said, if you do that Black Sabbath, I think it's Black Sabbath, the generals entered in their masses, that thing. If you do that and you do a low E for the general, like that, and when he gets to masses, when Ozzy gets to masses, if you do the high E, masses, and then you tune in between those, you're pretty close. Just a trick if you don't have a tuner. It works. Let's see how close I was with the tuner. Flat. Sharp. Geez, I got the B and E pretty close. So on a new set of strings right now, I just tug them all. I'm just tugging up and wiggling back and forth to get everything to seat in the nut and in the saddles, especially with an acoustic. And then retune. Yeah, see, it's all out of whack now. And another trick I learned way back when, if you go too far, you go sharp, go way below flat and then tune back up to pitch, because if you don't have like a perfect nut, you can like kind of get it starting to pinch in there and you'll go sharp and then you'll pull it back to where you think it is, and as soon as you start playing, that pinch will let go and you'll go flat again. So go below your pitch and then come back up to pitch. I'm using a tuner now. Let's just roughly see how the intonation is. So I'm going up to the 12th fret and just, I've got them tuned to pitch, open string. I'm gonna see what they are on the tuner, 12th fret. It's flat, flat. That's intonated. It's slightly flat. Little flat, that's way, no. You can't settle on it. That one's intonated. The high E's intonated. What was the other one? The D? D's right on. The high E's right on. The other ones are all flat. So we got to do that setup. But what I do next is look at the neck relief again. I'm just sighting down the neck. This is not as bad as I recall. I don't know if sitting down in this low humidity environment in the basement for 2 months did something, but I fret it on the first fret, and then I fret it on whatever the last fret is, 21, 22. You can get two active guitars. I have one upstairs that goes up to 24. There's probably more. So fret it at the first, fret it at the last fret, and then look in the middle at the fifth fret, or the sixth, seventh, and see the gap that's in there. That's your neck relief. You don't want too much, you don't want too little. There's still like a little bit too much. I wanna just bring a little bit of that up. You could take an E string. It's the relief on this from the top of the fret to the string when I'm fretting the top and the bottom fret is more than an E string. So that's too much. Now I gotta find where put that little package with the Allen. Yeah, good luck. The Allen wrenches. Oh, here they are. They're right near the tuner, halfway under a towel. I'll get it in there and I will just tighten it. Well, it depends on which way you're facing the guitar, if you're going to say clockwise or counterclockwise. I pulled this particular truss rod, I pulled towards the low E, towards myself. Put some tension on it to put more tension on the truss rod to counteract that back bow. And it wasn't much. This Allen key is about 3.5 inches long, and I moved it not even a half inch at the top of the key. So how much did the bottom of the key move? Not much at all. But there was a move. Now looking at the relief, I'm just gonna tweak a little bit more out. Sometimes you can take the neck and I'm bending it with my hands after I made a move, just kind of just help if that truss rod's in there stuck a little bit. All right, that's where I'd have the neck relief. So the relief's done. If you got a back bow, you're gonna lose, or an up bow, if your frets are buzzing out, you have to loosen the truss rod. And when you loosen a truss rod, make your adjustment and give it time. Give it time to like settle things in, or you know, try and help it with your hands. But like make one little tweak and come back an hour later or a day later. If you need to make another tweak, do that. So now I gotta get it back up to pitch. Through the rest of this process, make sure you're tuning with the brand new strings are going to go out of tune anyways. And we're trying to work on the guitar, not the strings. So next thing I'd look at is string height. They sell little like plastic doohickeys you can stick in there, and they come in like 12-inch radius, 16-inch radius, all the different radiuses for different types of manufacturers. What does Fender use? I'm going to have to look that up. I think they use 16. Gibson uses 12. Fender might use 16. Some of their necks are compound, where they start off like a real rolly 12 at the bottom, and when you get up top, they're going to a 16, even a 20, real flat, so you can get up there and do your fretwork. Down at the bottom, you got nice, comfortable chords, bar chords. I'm just double checking the neck relief back at pitch. Yeah, now the buzz is gone because I got like mirrory fret. Yep. Frets are good, neck relief's good. What are we doing now? String height. So I'm gonna eyeball down the. I'm looking at the back of the guitar, down the strings at the bridge, and seeing how the strings ride over the curvature of the neck. Just kind of rocking things back and forth. Of course, you're going to want it a little closer on the higher strings and a little. They did a good job. I think at the end, what's going to happen is NY Bill recommends Squire guitars. You know, if you're new and these are decently set up guitars. So I'm not going to change the bridge height. If you did need to, that you got that little Allen key. Sometimes it's a little tiny flathead. Sometimes you got, like on an old Telecaster, you got one flathead and a brass barrel that's doing two strings at once. So you got to like compensate. When I built mine, I put that on at first, and intonation was a pain. So then I went and got compensated brass bridge. Yeah. Compensated saddles for the vintage bridge, which you can do on any vintage guitar too, and that made the intonation possible. But I don't know what they were doing way back when. I think it was just covered up in the mix, maybe. Now we got to do intonation. So let me get it, make sure it's at pitch. Yeah, it's gonna need tuning for a couple days until it kind of settles in. But like my Fender upstairs, I really have to tune it. I'm not out like a session player or out gigging. It's just on a stand, and like when I'm watching TV, I grab it. But it's usually like still right in tune, unless I just happen to get. I think mine. I know this is my theory, but when I got it, it was covered in nicotine, like it was dripping down the fretboard. So this was either some recluse in his house and never came out and played this guitar, or that guitar I got used was, I got it from Elderly Instruments. You can trust them if you get a guitar from them. They're good guys. But it came stinking like a cigarette, and there was like sticky tar everywhere. So I have a feeling this guitar had been out gigging, and it had a tech taking care of it. So that Fender played very well. I just had to clean all that residue off of it and leave it sit in my basement out for like a month or 2 months to get the cigarette smell out of it. It's gone now, but that guitar's in good working order. All right, so I'm playing the E, I'm looking at the tuner, we're right on, I'm hitting the 12. So at the 12th, it's showing flat, so I'm loosening the screw to move the whole saddle forward. If you're going to tighten the screw because you're too sharp, take the tension out of the string, because you don't want to turn this screw fighting the tension of the string. Going lower, I mean, you can hear it just went flat just by me moving the saddle. So I'll get it back to pitch. That went way flat, like a D almost. Check a 12 again. So now I just went. You can see why a digital tuner helps. This needle is what's helping me on the meter. You can do it with any tuner. I just went too far. I loosened it too far, and now we're sharp. So I want to take some tension off the string and bring the saddle back again. So tighten it. Less than half split the difference with the amount I moved it forward. That's making sense. Nope, I gotta split the difference again. Loosen it just a bit. You can see how fiddly it is. That's why on a, you know, on acoustic, you get that bridge, you see the bridge is slanted. That's to help somewhat with intonation. But on a bridge, on an acoustic, you're making some compromises. So you've picked a sweet spot with that slant in the bridge. And then you'll notice some, they'll either do it by slowly changing the shape of the bridge itself, the bone, or when you get to the B and the E, you'll see like one is cut way back with the file and the next one's, you know, halfway back up. That's the way they're trying to intonate the acoustic. But intonating acoustic, that's another one of those steps that if you don't get it right, you gotta go get a new bridge blank and reshape the whole thing. On an electric, when you got these just the screws to mess with, don't be afraid. All right, the E is intonated. Go to the A. Get it in pitch, 12th fret. It's only slightly flat. So I just gave like a quarter turn on this screw. You can already hear it in the string, it lowered the pitch. So even that quarter turn, I needed to go an eighth turn. Let me pull it back a bit. Yeah, so if you've never done this before and you're trying it, don't get in there and turn this screw five turns. A's in tone. I think the D was good out of the box, but I'm checking it again because when you intonate these others, you might be stressing the wood in some way. Let me see. No, that's still dead on. There's the G. It's a little sharp on the tuner. So I went below it, come back up. And then check it to 12th. Slightly sharp, so I want to pull this back. The saddle, I want to make the saddle, the string length longer. I want to make the string length longer. And that was a third of a turn. The B, that looks pretty good. The E. Oh, if you're doing this too, make sure you have your volume up. Like get on the bridge pickup with your selector. Make sure you have the volume up. Sometimes the tuner is trying to pick it up acoustically and that needle's never gonna settle on you. I've done that before and I can't figure out why I'm not getting that needle to move well. There's E, check out the 12th. It starts to read real flat and then it comes up. I'm gonna maybe there's better output on the bridge pickup. Let me try that. Yeah, looks like we're getting more volume out of the bridge pickup. Yeah, the B and the E were intonated. And the A was good from the factory. So now I got them all intonated. The string is in tune up the neck. So an E down there should sound like a E up here. Nothing sharp or flat. And what would be next? Bridge height, that's kind of personal preference. You know, the closer you're going to get, the louder. It's going to change the tone. I'm just going to leave this stock. I don't even really plug in anymore. But so, and I can't vouch for the quality of these electric in this, but like I said before, for what was this, $250 delivered with a gig bag, this is a good value. And the stuff I just did in these episodes, it's kind of finesse, polishing the frets, change the relief in the neck. I checked the saddle height, which all seemed to be good. If you're doing a neck angle adjustment, You're gonna have to change the satellite again, of course. That's easier with like a fender style, which is loosening screws and putting a shim in there. That's a whole other episode too. But as far as setup goes, you know, strings on, check the relief. If you're gonna change to a heavier gauge string, you're gonna put more tension on there and you're gonna set, you're gonna pull that neck a little more and get more relief. You're gonna have to counteract with the truss rod again. Saddle height, we talked about that, and we just intonated the bridge, and this guitar is ready to go back upstairs. So for $250, it's playing nice now. Sound good. That might be a buzz. No, that's my crappy playing. Yeah, there's no more scratching the frets on bends. So I think it's a good deal. I'm probably going to bring this upstairs and play it a while and see how it goes. But as far as setup, there, I just told you two. I don't know how long it took. This one might be like 60 minutes, but I don't know. A few people like longer ones. I might cut it into two once I start editing. We'll see. Okay, until next time, enjoy messing with your guitar. Just don't do anything that's irreparable and only do things that you're comfortable with. I'll talk to you guys later.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the binary revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.